There seems to be a new constant at Northern Michigan University in Marquette, and that is change. Change in state funding impacting the budget and the formula for students looking to attend college. Change in the physical campus with renovated buildings and new projects on the horizon. Change in demographics impacting enrollment. And change in the way students are receiving their education. Today on WNMU's Media Meet, we sit down and talk with NMU leadership. How NMU is pushing forward in the midst of all this change, next on Media Meet. Welcome to Media Meet. I'm your host, Elizabeth Peterson. Northern Michigan University had to finalize a budget this year before the state of Michigan finalized its budget. The good news? NMU remains one of the most affordable in the state, and despite an ever-changing landscape, administration says Northern is in a very good financial position. Joining me today to talk more about this and about all the changes happening around campus are President Fritz Erickson, Vice President of Finance and Administration Gavin Leach, and Vice President of Extended Learning and Community Engagement Steve Vandenhoven. Thank you all for joining us. This is a special Media Meet for me because this is my first show. So I'm very excited to welcome you all. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this has been a really exciting start to a fall semester. I feel like fall this year was as exciting of a semester as I can remember. There was so much going on around campus, big milestones, 120 years anniversary for Northern. We're halfway through the fall semester. So talk about how things are going and what enrollment looks like.
Well, first of all, we're just as delighted as can be that you've taken over the role of Media Meet.
Thank you.
Very exciting for all of us, and it's just part of the whole excitement that's going on at the university. The kickoff to the fall semester could not have been better. A lot of exciting programs and activities, terrific students. We continue to go up in enrollment, which is very exciting for us, and so the things just couldn't have been better this fall.
That's amazing. And when we look at demographics, there are fewer high school graduates.
Yes.
Those who are graduating high school, less of them are applying to college because the economy is going well. They are able to find decent paying jobs right outside of high school. So how does that impact Northern?
Well, it is a challenge. I mean, when you stop and think that in the upper Midwest, where we draw from, we don't draw just from Michigan, just from the upper peninsula, there are 45,000 fewer high school graduates in the last several years, which is a remarkable number. And so it is a challenge. But we meet that challenge in a number of exciting ways. First of all, the kinds of programs that we put in place. We meet that challenge because we have extraordinarily welcoming faculty and staff. I was with Presidential Scholars the other night, and you know, they have so many faculty and staff there supporting and engaging with them. And we meet that challenge in large part because we're in this amazing location in Marquette and in the Upper Peninsula. We celebrate who we are and where we are, and it makes a big difference.
Absolutely. And certainly with that enrollment news, it makes a big impact when you're looking at funding from the state. This year it was a little bit lower than projected. The news came later than you had hoped. Talk about how that impacted Northern, what the funding rates ended up being for this year.
Yeah, I mean, each year it's a challenge, especially when you don't find out till 3 months after your budget year starts. But this year is 1.9%, but of that, 1.4% was related to reimbursement of Indian tuition waiver. That had not been happening for the past two decades, basically, and the remaining was for operations, about 0.5%. So while it was a little bit lower than what we had projected early in the year, you know, we did have, we do adapt as a university, and as you can see, over the past decade, we basically kept our costs at about a 1.1% increase in operating costs each year. And that's just through continuing to change our operations, adapt to changes in enrollment, adapt to changes in other trends, looking at ways to do cost savings, whether it be utilities or other things on campus. We're in a continual adaption mode, but
sure.
But we're always looking forward too. So it's a way for us to plan ahead and be prepared when changes like that occur.
Sure. And, go ahead.
One other thing is, you know, you were talking about the state funding is really the way higher ed in general in the state has been funded has really changed over the past four decades.
Sure.
And you look in the 70s and 80s, we're pretty much we were about 70% state funded. Today we're closer to 30% state funded, so it puts more pressure on tuition as part of our overall equation for our budget.
And when you talk about that, less state funding, tuition has to go up, so some of that burden falls on students and their families. How is Northern helping our students, our families, so that this can still be a choice for them?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things we do is, as you look at our tuition and fee rate, is we've been able to maintain the second lowest tuition and fees in the entire state. And that comes to the adaption of our operations to meet that challenge. We also, every year, look at upping our financial aid to support students to ensure that the neediest students have the support they need to be able to attend the university. That's very important.
Sure.
To who we are as a university.
Yeah.
And I think those factors account for the way we adjust for the more pressure on tuition fees.
And Steve, you had mentioned you have some programs that middle college students that are able to start their college career before even graduating high school. Can you talk about that a little
bit,
how that's helping?
We're very active. We call it the Northern Promise, and it consists of two main programs. One is concurrent and dual enrollment, where students take coursework sometimes in their high schools while they're still high school students, taught by their high school teachers who are vetted through our academic departments here to teach on behalf of the university. And it's at a significantly a discounted tuition rate, and the high school pays on behalf of the students, so they can knock out, some of them knock out, you know, up to 30 credits before they
Sure.
graduate from high school in one of those programs. And then the middle college is a program where students stay an extra year of high school. And that fifth year of high school, they haven't graduated from high school, they spend entirely at the university. And part of the cost of that is covered by the high school and the state allocation that they get. So these are a couple of ways that students can sort of defray the cost, the increasing cost of higher education. We also have a number of non-credit or non-credit programs where students can gain skills. You mentioned that some of them are getting jobs right out of high school, and that's another change in higher education, is that it's not an automatic assumption that someone's going to graduate from high school at 18. Come to the university for 4 years and then be done with it, right?
Sure.
Some mm-hmm. students are getting jobs right out of high school, coming to the university to maybe get an associate's degree, go back into high school or back into the workforce or stay in the workforce. And there's a sort of on-ramps and off-ramps into the university throughout a lifetime. And I think we're going to see that even more. But that's another way that students can be job ready without having to take on the entire cost of a university education all at once.
For sure. Go ahead.
The one other point you had asked about the state funding
yeah.
levels is I talked about the percentage of funding from the state versus tuition. Is just to give you an idea, the dollar differential is back in 2002, the university received $52 million from the state to operate the institution. Today, 17 years later, we receive $48 million from the state. So that's where you can see the pressure happening on the tuition.
Sure.
And but it also reflects our ability to have to control costs as we move
For sure.
forward.
And you've been able to stay one of the most affordable. I mean,
a central part of who we are.
Yeah.
We're about affordability, we're about access,
yep.
but most of all, we're about terrific academic programs that lead to great jobs and great lives and great opportunities.
And really, that's kind of the next question, where I was going to go next. One of the ways that you continue to propel Northern forward is by all of these projects and initiatives that are happening around campus. We saw the renovation of the Northern Center, mm-hmm. you know, that opened this fall, and I can speak firsthand what an amazing facility that is. And also the addition of new academic programs.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that energy, the strategic planning that you're doing now.
Yeah, we went into a very comprehensive strategic planning process. And our strategic plan is all about investing in innovation. In fact, that's the title of our strategic plan. And what we do is we look at at where the future of higher ed is going to be, and then really move now towards that direction. So it is new academic programs. You know, first in the country to start a medicinal plant chemistry program. And we just received a wonderful grant and partnership with Shimatsu that helped us put together a $4 million research laboratory for that, pressing that envelope of innovation. They've heard about our forensic research site, or what we've done with the Bayer Center for supporting education around autism, or whether what we're doing with the theater program and the incredible innovation that's happening there. So innovation is very much who we are, and it really is the cornerstone that allows this university to move forward, and why we're in really a great position to be able to manage and handle some of the demographic and financial challenges that face us.
And it really is continually planning ahead and looking forward. In the last university forum, you presented the master plan, something that hadn't been completed for quite a while or updated. And it shows a neat picture of what the campus could look like 5-10 years down the line. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is if funding comes into place, donors are you know, come forward. There's a lot of what ifs when you're looking at the picture, nobody can look at it and say, oh, this is exactly what it's going to look like in 10 years. But talk a little bit about that process and just what the master plan is showing.
What we do is every now and then this last update was 10 years ago in 2008, and it really is taking a look at the future of the university. And as a university, you have to continually adapt and innovate and change. We have to take a look at that and look outward. So as we do change as a university, we have to have plans in place to adapt to that change. And what we do is we looked at getting input from throughout the campus community, as well as outside community and people in the rest of the leadership on campus. And the focus was, where are we going next and how do we adapt to that? And we segmented in the areas. We have the sports and rec area of campus, we have the academic mall area, we have residential life, and how can we make sure that we're prepared for the future in each of those areas? And the academic mall area, a lot of the focus was on student and academic programs, and as Fritz had just mentioned, the increasing demand for our labs on campus. So. So what we do is we take a look at that and say, if we were to change and we were to get funding, whether it be private donors, state funding, other types of funding for the programs, where would we want to build that out and change the university to adapt to these new programs? And yeah, if you look at one of the, if somebody sees our campus master plan, you'd see like space off of our...
There it is. We do have some pictures.
Yeah, Weston yeah. Hall, you'll see space for the academic labs to expand their labs on campus.
Yeah.
That'd be, if you're looking at that...
It's the academic mall
there,
I believe.
Oh, that's the academic mall area there.
Yep.
Okay. That would be, I can't see that one from there. That would be D on your letters up there, as far as spanning academic mall. If you look at letter C up there, that's looking at our student programming space. And, you know, as we have changing needs for programming, for advising, potentially student union type space on
yes.
campus. You know, that trying to keep it in the mall in the center of the activity that happens on campus is where we felt would be the best place to look at that. As we look at other academic programs like the College of Business and potentially having a facility for them right in the mall, you can see that letter 2 and potentially 3 up there, number 2 and 3 is a potential space to really expand and get them into the middle of campus and really distinctive, attractive facilities to attract programs and have an innovative space for those programs.
Yeah.
I think that's really critical. On the residential life side, as we have had an expansion in the number of students staying on campus,
yeah.
we have to look to where are areas that if we need to expand further, where can we do that? And we have an area offsite at the end of our Woods complex where we have space to add an additional hall. And then part of what we want to do is take a look long term of getting our health and wellness integrated down with where our students are living.
Sure.
And yet make it accessible to the rest of us on campus that they want to access those facilities. And so we have some areas identified for that. Sports and rec campus, there's a lot of opportunities there, you know, as we look forward. You can see in letters 2 and and four, or numbers two and four, I should say. We're looking at potentially, we've talked a lot about having a basketball venue on campus, and then a concourse connecting that to the Berry we felt would be a great way to have some synergy between the programs and better use of facilities as we're planning it out. Letter three, or number three, is where we'd look at if we need to replace our pool. Long term, we do need to do something about that, and so we're looking at opportunities there. If we are ever doing additional sheet of ice, indoor tennis and football training and soccer and things, we were identifying space for that. And the other area to try to create more life at that end of campus is potentially doing like another P3 partnership where we integrate commercial and retail and resident like apartments on the upper floors and retail on the lower floors. And so that could create some vibrancy to that area campus. And we think it could be a pretty big thing for the university and for the community. So there's a lot of things you can do with that.
Sure.
But you want to ensure that if you are going to plan that out, you have ideas in place before that happens. And so better strategic use of funding as you move forward.
A lot of opportunity there. And it's really neat to see the picture of what it could be.
There is a lot of opportunity. And we did most of the things that we set out to do 10 years ago with the strategic plan. I suspect we'll do most, if not all, of the things with this strategic plan. This university's on the move, and the facilities are an important part of that.
And we're gonna highlight one of the projects coming up, but first I just wanna give a quick reminder for those who may just be joining us and for our guests listening on Public Radio 90. We're here talking all things NMU with NMU President Fritz Erickson, Vice President of Finance and Administration Gavin Leach, and Vice President of Extended Learning and Community Engagement Steve Vandenhaven. Thank you again for joining us. So to highlight one of the projects that's on the horizon, it's in the design phase now, Northern's Capital Outlay Project. The renovation of the Career and Engineering Tech Facility, we all know it as the Jacob Eddy Complex. It's going to take a while before I start to associate the other one. The last project, state budget project like this, was Jamrich, which was a great success. What does this latest project entail? I understand some of it's going to be demolished, and it's a fun project.
Yeah, what's interesting is that similar to Jamrich, we took a look at it to say, we want to transform the facility, whether it be a new facility or transform the existing facility. In Jamrich's case, we had taken a look at doing a renovation of the existing facility, but ultimately a better use of funds was to create a new facility, create a greater efficiencies, enabled us to put the concepts we wanted in place for an academic facility. You have like a main street, informal learning areas, open learning, adaptive learning in the facility. And so we decided to take that same approach as we're looking at the Career and Tech Facility, is how do we really transform it and really make it a distinctive, really signature facility on the campus, because we really want to, promote excellence on campus and excellence in innovation, tie back to our strategic plan. And we started to look at, whether we could pull off doing a new facility, and really the numbers didn't work this time. Last time it did work better, with the Jamrich project, but this time it really took a look at, it worked better down at the existing Jacob Eddy Center, a Career and Tech Facility. And in looking at that, to be innovative and to create the best use of funds, we came up with an innovative way to reduce our square footage there. We're actually going to reduce the footprint by 25%. And that's actually going to save us in operating costs about $200,000 to $250,000 a year. And in place of that, we're going to create a real distinctive, attractive-looking facility. We're going to create open. We're going to open the walkways so there's wider paths for the students. It's more synergy between the programs; are better aligned with one another. You have wider hallways, informal learning space.
There's a picture there.
You can see, as you come in, we have an innovation lab that'll occur in there to attract businesses and highlight programs that we have. It's just really meant to make that facility be attractive for not only the students, but that in that facility they work with a lot of the area businesses. So it's creating a space to have some synergy with the businesses and have more opportunities with the business. And
we have a long-standing commitment to career and technical education.
Yeah.
It is very much part of who we are as an institution. And there are not many institutions in the state that really have that kind of that kind of commitment. Having this kind of facility expands on that, allows us to promote new and innovative career and technical programs, allows us to create partnerships between traditional liberal arts type programs and career and technical programs. When you look at the future of higher education, those institutions that find ways to bring these together, I think, are going to be very successful at supporting both their students and the communities that we serve. And so this is as exciting a project as we've had on this campus.
So possibly starting this end of the year, earliest would be, I guess, the end of the year.
This project could go through a longer planning cycle, and it's a state project because they're involved in each of the pieces. Right now we're in the design phase where we submitted, and next we would get construction authorization, which would allow us to go further in our architectural design and programming. Breaking ground would probably be December 2020. And it would be August 2022 when we complete, because one of the challenges when you do a renovation is you do have to have it in phases, because
sure,
you have to run the programs you have doing now. So we have some spaces identified where we can shift programs as we're renovating other spaces. So it creates a little longer timeline,
sure,
but also.
And so much of the excitement is really what's going to happen in the building. And Steve and his team have been just incredibly innovative in how to rethink how you prepare people to be welders, or the merging of our new truck driving program and commercial,
sure,
driver's license. I think it's what happens inside that's going to be the most exciting part of it.
And I do want to talk about virtual reality, because that is something that is really changing the way that classes are operating, and that's a big future for you. And talk a little bit about where things are with that program.
Virtual reality.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, the virtual reality program started really because of our students who are studying at a distance, our online, our global campus students. And, you know, as a university, we feel a really strong commitment as a public university to reach out to people who can't make it to campus and come and study as a traditional on-campus student might. And so that's why the global campus was created. And then the next step of that is not only giving them access to an NMU education, but access to an NMU education that as closely mirrors as what they would get in a face-to-face setting as possible.
Sure.
Now, the competencies that they learn and the courses that they take are the exact same courses they would take on campus, but the format doesn't lend itself to a lot of real genuine face-to-face interaction, and some of those experiences get lost in an online environment. So we set out to develop a virtual reality program to fill that gap. And there are a lot of places that are doing it, a lot of universities that are engaging in virtual reality. What we're doing differently is we realize that the technology is progressing really fast, and the processing power of some of these headsets is increasing exponentially, but no one's writing educational content for them. And so we've done that in-house. And what we're doing is there are a lot of folks using it in more of a passive sense. So you can put on a headset and you can take a virtual tour of the Coliseum, but you're basically just looking around, right? What we're doing is we're programming, as President Eric had said, students will be able to practice their welding skills and while sitting at their kitchen table. So we are programming interactive virtual reality environments where you're actually practicing a skill, not just getting a more passive experience. So I think that's really setting ourselves ahead of the curve in terms of most colleges and universities, and is very consistent with our investing in innovation strategic plan.
And like you said, one huge component of that is access, to be able to get online. So that brings us to the Educational Access Network. That's a big project that has been almost 10 years in the making. So where is that? We're almost kind of to the end of that? Or
well,
it never really ends, does it?
It never really ends. It's sort of 10 years in the making from the aspect of we've been doing the LTE/WiMAX broadband, wireless broadband in communities. Now,
yeah,
the last 2 years has been expanding it so that others in the UP can take advantage of the technology that we have. And we've now grown at, we had a goal of 64 communities when we started out almost 2 years ago. And we've actually expanded and gone beyond that. We're in 87 communities throughout the UP now.
Something like 5,000 families.
Yeah, we're almost to 5,000 families connected on it. And so it's really been successful. A lot of demand from communities, a lot of cooperation in helping change rural communities throughout the Upper Peninsula. We've had communities in northern Lower Peninsula sort of pushing us to help those out, and we're looking at ways and opportunities that we could also help them.
It's impacted our enrollment not only in our academic programs in the global campus, by giving people access to it's hard to take an online program if you don't have access to the internet. And so it's helped in that respect, and the global campus has doubled in size since it was developed in the fall of 16. And then our non-credit programming. We recently opened the UP Cybersecurity Institute, and many of the offerings, they're non-credit offerings through that institute that will allow people to be job ready to work in cybersecurity can be offered online and can be accessed from the comfort of people's own homes.
Sure. It's amazing. And it's great to see so many people be able to have access to these programs. And it is, you know, we've talked about kind of all of the change, mm-hmm. some of the challenges that you're facing. So I guess what are you focusing on the most the next few years, just to make sure you're ahead of all of that?
And you know, when I look at what the threats would be to higher ed, I think there's no greater threat than the whole area of student debt. And so we've been having a lot of conversations about how can we specifically address that. You know, Northern Michigan University has been known for taking problems head on. When people couldn't get high-speed internet access in rural communities in the UP, we just took it on, and that's been so much fun seeing the impact of it. Well, we can take on the issue of student debt. We've had a lot of discussions about how can we creatively look at that and explore it and be able to do it, because so much of who we are is about access, and access is about affordability and making sure that students, when they graduate, have as low a debt or no debt, if at all possible. So I look to that as one of those important issues to be able to address. It's not an easy problem to solve, particularly when you think about the declining support from the state, and when you think about many of the other kinds of challenges that are out there. But that should not deter us from taking a real hard run at helping solve that problem, as well as always looking for that next innovative academic program. And we're not quite ready to announce the next medicinal plant chemistry, but we'll surprise you sooner than later, I think, as we continue to go down this path. Because as we look to the future of what our students need and what our community needs, there are just so many innovative opportunities.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining me at my first media meet. I really appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll be watching and keeping up to date on all the things happening on campus. We're out of time. We made it through the end, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Until next time, I'm Elizabeth Peterson for WNMU's Media Meet. Thanks for watching.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.